Okay, so today I would like to present a taste show from the Hekiganraku or the Blue Cliff Records for the new. We have a few new people here, and for the new people, a taste show is basically a talk on a koan. It's not that easy to understand what that is without having done the introductory lecture, without realizing what a koan is and why we do koans. So a little bit will be made more clearer on doing the second lecture. I mentioned that to you already. But nevertheless, we'll proceed with this. So I'll just read the instructions and then we'll go on to the case and the verse. The instruction here was written by Master Engo. He was a master that sort of rediscovered the Blue Cliff Record after Secho originally. He originally compiled it, and Secho is the one that also originally wrote the verse on this, which we'll go through as well. So this is in Song China. This introduction was written, and Secho lived from 980 to 1052, and then about 100 years later, Master Engo came along. He lived from 1111 to 1117, so Middle Ages, if you like, early Middle Ages. Just one more thing I wanted to mention here: Dahui, which is also a famous master. He is supposed to be the first person that taught or somehow used the Blue Cliff Record cases or barriers or koans, as we call them here, as a practice. And he got very disenchanted because in those days, and even in some zendos even today, koans are usually memorized. So every student that does koan work has to memorize each koan. We don't memorize it in our lineage. But as they were memorized, they started reciting them willy-nilly, if you like, sort of just very casually, as if they had some metaphysical truth. And he got so upset about this, Dahui, that he burned the books. And he thought, this is not what it's about. You really got to find the essence of a koan, not. There's no in itself, you know. There's no use memorizing it and then repeating it as if there is some sort of, you know, something, some truth in there. So it's looking really behind what is meant, you know, in a koan that is really important. But then, of course, it was revived and Encho found it, and then he republished it, if you like. And then, as we all know, Dogen discovered it, and on his last day in China, before he went back to Japan, he wrote it down, and it became part of the Soto school. And of course, we, being a Japanese lineage, have also inherited the Soto Koan collections, which is the Blue Cliff Records. So this is usually the third book in our curriculum study that we address. Okay, let's go into the introduction. First, I'll read it out completely, and we'll go through it line by line. The myriad Buddhas have never come into the world. There is no Dharma to be given to the people. The patriarch has never come from the West. There has never been a transmission of mind. As a matter of course, the people of this time do not understand. They continue to run toward the outside, looking for it. They do not know that the single great matter lying beneath their feet has never been found by the thousand sages. Right at this very moment, seeing and not seeing, hearing and not hearing, speaking and not speaking, knowing and not knowing, where do they come from? If you have not perceived, then go into the cave of entanglements and understand. To test, I cite the case. Look. Okay, another one of those easy ones that everyone understands straight away. Okay, let's start. Let's look. Let's see how we can unpack this. The myriad Buddhas have never come into the world. There is no Dharma to be given to the people. This is really classical Zen. And it's straight to the point. It points straight towards it, you know, to what Zen is all about. It's a great opening line, I must say. The myriad Buddhas have never come into the world. There is no Dharma to be given to the people. Now, this is, of course, very challenging because here we are. We all know that there is a Buddha, and we all know that the Buddha existed. I mean, there's evidence of that nowadays. And, of course, it's not just talking about one Buddha. You're talking about all the other Buddhas that have lived on this earth. And we all know the Dharma. I mean, we know the Pali canon. We know the Tibetan canon, the Chinese canon, and all the other thousands of books that have been written about it. That's all the Dharma. And here Engo is saying the Buddhas have never come into the world. There is no Dharma to be given to the people. Okay, why is he saying that? He's challenging us here. Why is he saying that? And when we look at that question, why, we need to understand the purpose of a koan. The purpose of a koan is to create a barrier. So a koan means a case, a precedent, but it's also a barrier. Okay. And what is that barrier? Like with all koans, the barrier is our dualistic thinking, our transactional way of looking at the world. Our way of looking at there is a Buddha and there is a Dharma and there are people and there is a transmission. And of course, we teach that transmission here in Zen. So from that perspective, you know, if we're looking at it from that perspective, then this does not make sense. Doesn't make any sense at all. So it challenges us to go beyond that dualistic perspective, to actually see that there never was a Buddha in the first place. There's no transmission whatsoever that has taken place. That is not an easy thing to see. That is something we need to experience. And of course, that is why we practice Zen, in order to experience that. So in the other way of looking at that is the myriad Buddhas have never come into the world. I mean, we all know that life and death are serious matters. We hear that very often. Discovering what life and death is actually really about is also one of the great benefits that we get when we practice Zen, and when we start realizing what really birth and death is all about. So from the perspective, again, that the koans are, and remember, the koans are all from that ultimate perspective. They always point to that perspective. It challenges us also to saying, well, the Buddha really never lived. How can I say that the Buddha really never lived? I mean, that's in the past. There is no past. This is a story that we have, that has migrated towards this point. And we say we have evidence of it, but all these evidences, what do they really point to? We really need to be able to see right here, right now, in order to understand this. You know, so, and this is not easy. Right here, right now is infinity. It never finishes right here, right now. You know, those that are into physics, there are some great theories, especially with quantum theory now, where this is actually, it's pointing to that right now. Everything is happening simultaneously. So when we're looking at it from that perspective, we can say that there was never a Buddha, you know. Or what is the Buddha? The Buddha is nothing but right now. And the challenge here for us is to verify for ourselves whether we can actually truly see that. That's the first line of this introduction. 2, 3. The patriarch has never come from the West. There has never been a transmission of mind. Of course, we all know the famous transmissions. There's a whole book on the transmission of mind, the Denkoroku, where it is cataloged exactly what each master, how they receive transmission of mind. And here Engo is saying the patriarch, of course, Bodhidharma, has never come from the West. There has never been a transmission of mind. again, we can look at that from those two perspectives. If we look at it from the ordinary perspective, the transactional perspective, and that is usually the perspective that we're stuck in, that we can only see, this sentence does not make sense. So the challenge again is to find out what is really meant by that. And of course, there's always clues like coming, never come from the West, coming, going. You know, what it appears that we are coming and going at the same time. We're always here. Within the context of coming and going, we're always here. You know, what does that mean, coming and going? This is really what needs to be penetrated. And again, great line in the introduction. As a matter of course, it goes on, the people of this time do not understand. As a matter of course, the people of this time do not understand. And we can say that over and over again. As a matter of, this was written, keep in mind, this was written in the 11th century or 12th century. As a matter of course, the people of this time do not understand. But we could say that right now too. As a matter of course, people do not get it. In order to get it, we need to have that experience that we talk about in Zen. We need to have an experience that is beyond time and space for us to access that and for us to be able to see that. Then it starts making sense. They continue to run towards the outside, looking for it. They continue. So it's talking about the people that haven't seen it look outside. And we all do that, especially those people that are still at that Mu stage or looking at discovering what Mu is about. We cannot help but being trapped in one way or another in this transactional world. We are looking at things from the outside. What is Mu? Even the question. There's a Mu out there. What is Mu? Or what is awakening? It's pointing always to something else. There's a me that is looking for something on the outside. They continue to looking from the outside, you know. And that is, of course, what we do. We continuously look at it from the outside. And I had a discussion with Jack. I can see Jack on Zoom here, briefly on last week, and we were laughing about it because we were saying, don't read too much, because that's looking at the outside. And Jack was reminding me that all the Zen teachers always quote all the books in the world, even though they say that we shouldn't really read. But of course we do that. It doesn't mean that we can't read anymore. We can't look at it from the outside, because that's the way we function. Our functional mind is a mind that cannot easily do it any other way. We function that way. Our function is for me to have an identity, for me to be here, and for me to understand something. That is the way, that is my worldview, that is the way it functions. But of course, in Zen or in Buddhism, we know that we need to go beyond that, and that is what is meant by that. And in order to do that, we need to, the word that is often used, introspect. But actually, I like the word letting go. We need to let go. You know, the introspect again is as if there is something inside. Inside, outside, these are all concepts. But letting go is, to me, it nails it much better. That's a way of getting to a point of just letting go, so that there's nothing there. Nothing there that can entangle us, you know. And at that moment, there is a chance for us to have that glimpse, that perspective. So this is what I think is meant by that. They do not know that the single great matter lying beneath their feet has never been found by the thousand sages. In other words, Kensho, or the awakening experience of the Buddha, has never been found. Why? Why has that never been found? That even that question, it has never been found, presumes that there is a finder and something to be found. Again, it traps us into this way of thinking, into this way, there's something that I need to find. I need to find out what Mu is. There's a trap there. unfortunately, in our functional mind, that's the way it works. It's so difficult to get out of that. The only way that we realize that there is nothing to be found is again by letting go. Letting go, and of course, that's what our practice is. So this is what this is referring. I gave a talk the other day at the Bodhi Chan, and I put down, practice verification, Dogen's famous practice verification. We are what we seek, was the title of the talk. We are what we seek. You know, so if I look for Mu, I can never find it. I am Mu. You know, if I look for God, I can never find God, because how can I find myself, if you like, in that sense. We are what we seek. It's really, that is why it cannot be found, because we are it itself. That's why it cannot be found. So that's what is not easy to penetrate. Certainly not with our intellectual mind, because our intellectual mind demands context. And context is divided. There's one and the other. So that's why that is so difficult. So it says, right at this very moment, seeing and not seeing, hearing and not hearing, speaking and not speaking, knowing and not knowing, where do they come from? Where does that come from? Again, a shift is required. That question itself is, of course we try again with our functional mind, we try and tackle that intellectually, but a shift is required in order to see that. So, if you don't get it, he says, if you have not perceived, and this is the last line of the introduction, if you have not perceived, then go into the cave of entanglements. Isn't that a lovely phrase? Go into the cave of entanglements. You know, what's the cave of entanglements? That's our discursive thinking. That's our discriminating mind. That is the cave of entanglements. So even in our cushion, we know what the practice is, but we cannot help but go into the cave of entanglements. And we want more entanglements because we love entanglements. They're quite exciting, those entanglements. We love delving into the cave of entanglements. And the entanglements in many ways are koans too. They are designed, if you like, or they are used, not necessarily designed, because they weren't specifically designed as such. They're just phrases of a dialogue that occurred thousands of years ago. But they are used as an entanglement for us to untangle. So he's saying that now, if you haven't got it yet after this introduction, go and have a look at the cave of entanglement, which is our koan, which comes next. That is a real doozy of a cave of entanglement. He says, go and have a look at that and let me show it. Let me show it and present it to you. Okay. So now we come to the koan, to the cave of entanglement. The case. Ryo, a Zen devotee, asked Kinzen, how is it when a single arrow has broken through the three barriers? Again, great question. How is it when a single arrow has broken through the three barriers? Okay. So first of all, the three barriers. Okay, what are the three barriers? Now, we could say all of the concepts of Buddhism are three barriers. The three goals of Zen are the three barriers. There are so many, you know, we always joke that we can study Buddhism by numbers, because there are so many numbers. There's the seven this and the eight this and the eightfold path, and there's the three barriers. And there's just so many numbers in Buddhism. Okay, so the three barriers, if you like, is a metaphor for all the concepts that are there. So how is it when a single arrow has broken through the three barriers? So we could say, a single arrow has broken through the entire canon of Buddhism. In other words, you get it. I mean, what is the canon of Buddhism, if you like, all the teachings of Buddhism? And there's all something to get for us to get, to somehow practice. And he's talking about a single arrow being able to cut through all of that. You know, and looking at this, by the way, it's a lovely metaphor. So the metaphor from the little bit of a study that I did on this is a military formation, apparently. The three barriers relates in ancient Chinese to a military formation. First, the inside battle. Then there is the outside battle. And there is the middle battle, you know. So here, a single arrow is like being able to shoot the enemy with one shot, getting rid of all the military formations with one shot. Probably an atomic bomb. Bang. One shot. Getting rid of it more. Now, in Zen, as we know, especially those that have done the introduction lectures, you know, that is our goal. Our goal is to find a single barrier, which is our experience, our realization that cuts through all of it, that lets us see if you only for a glimpse to start off with, and then of course to personalize that, to somehow enlarge that vision that we get. We continue then doing that. But that is our quest, is to find that single arrow. And we use, as the arrow, what do we use? Mu. Mu is our arrow. Arrow. Mu is our arrow. That is the single arrow of our tradition that we use. There are, of course, other arrows that we can use. There are pink ones and blue ones and red ones. But ours is Mu. Okay. That's the one that we use as a tool, if you like. So again, Ryo, a Zen devotee, asked Kinzen, how is it when a single arrow has broken through the three barriers? Great question. Now Kinzen, very famous master. By the way, I should say before we go along, there's a combat starting here, okay? People joke, especially my Theravadan friends, when I start talking about a Dharma combat, okay? It's like, it just doesn't sound Buddhist, having a combat, you know. It's not very lovely and kind, you know. But it's a typical Chinese, in the Chinese and the Japanese tradition, these metaphors were used. So a combat here is to be able to draw out, if you like, the essence through dialogue. That's what it's meant by a combat. And they are actually quite funny. Once we start getting into them, we start learning the way certain masters use certain phrases and then shoot various arrows at their opponents, let's say a teacher and a student, they are meant to evoke realization. That's what it's all about. It's about evoking realization, and all of a sudden with a single arrow, I get it. It's not a systematic, this is what you do from A to B to get there. It's like, don't you see this? So look at a Dharma combat in that context. That is the context to look at it. Okay. So Kaizan said, bring out the master within the barriers for me to see. Okay, looking at it again. How is it, was the question, when a single arrow has broken through the three barriers? So Kaizen didn't say A, B, C, D, this is how you do it. He said, bring out the master of the barrier for me to see. Show me. You know, that is what has to happen. Bring out the master of the barrier for me to see. That's a great, great line. You know, bring out the master for the barrier for me to see. And in way, of course, in the Dokusan room, for those that are working on students, that is always what is demanded, that you bring out the master of the barrier. The barrier can be the koan, you know. So the master of the barrier, another word for that is our true self. Who am I? What is my true self? That is the question. Bring that out. Show me that. Don't talk about it. You know, go beyond the concepts of it. Bring out the true master of the barrier for me to see. That was his reply to the student. Very powerful. Ryo said, In that case, I realize my error and must make amends. Okay. In that case, I realize my error and must make amends. So that was Ryo's answer to that question. So there's different interpretations to this. By the way, this is quite an interesting book. So the Blue Cliff Records are, that's the book of the Blue Cliff Record. But there's a commentary on them by Hakuin Zenji and also by Tenkai. Okay. Now, we all know Hakuin Zenji's Song of Sazen. And so he was, I think, 16th century. And Tenkai is a more modern master. When I say modern, probably 200 or 300 years old. And they just wrote a little bit of a commentary on their take on that. And it's interesting the way these two masters look at this phrase by Ryo. So Ryo, by the way, was a Rinzai student, apparently. And Hakuin was a Rinzai master. So he values his take of Ryo very highly. And Tenkai, who's a Soto one, he doesn't think much of this response at all. He thinks it's very weak, you know, as a response. So this is just an interesting aside on that. So in any case, all we have here is what Ryo has said. And he said, in that case, I realize my error and must make amends. So Hakuin would say, like, that in itself is the perfect presentation of bring out the master, show me your true self. And Tenkai would say, no, that's very weak. He's retreating. He's dumbfounded. That question, bring out the master of the barrier and show me, is not an easy answer for a student. Sorry, it's not easy to get an answer from a student on that. You know, bring out the barrier show me your true self, that question in the Dokusan room. A lot of students stumble with a question like that. And a lot of them wouldn't know what to say. And I think that Ryo here, by saying, I realize my error and must make amends, could have been stumbled. Or he could have said, oh gosh, I realize my error. Here we go again. I must make amends. You know, almost sarcastically. In other words, he did get it, you know. So anyway, these are just different interpretations. And that is why koan work can be quite fun when you look at it from these different perspectives like that. Okay. So after that, okay, Kinzan, after he said, oh, I realize my error, you know, I must make amends, you know, Kinzan straight away came back and said, well, what are you waiting for? Go on. What are you waiting for? Right now, show me, you know, show me, you know. And Ryo said, a good shot was let loose, but no one can discern it. In other words, he already fired, bang, a good shot was let loose. I already killed, if you like, all the barriers in my presentation, but you do not see it. Okay, so that was his reply. A good shot was let loose, but no one can discern it, and was about to go out and leave. So what was the shot is a question. That would come up in the Dokusan room. What was the shot, okay, that he fired? What was the shot that he fired? And you must see that. We must present that if we really see it. You know, what was the shot that he fired? Anyway, as soon as he was about to go out, Kinzan said, come here. In other words, he didn't let him go. He's relentless. Come here, he said. Come back. You know, come here. And Ryo turned his head. Okay. Again, Ryo was criticized for that because he, in many ways, he should have just left. You know, but he turned his head. In other words, he's still a little bit, he still wants to keep going with this. You know, it wasn't checkmate in this combat. He didn't checkmate him. If he would have left, he could have maybe checkmate him. He could have said, that's it, you know, there's only going, there's no coming back. What do you mean coming back, come back, you know, like that. Kinzan grasped him and said, leaving aside for the moment the matter of one arrow breaking through the three barriers, try shooting an arrow for me. try shooting an arrow for me. Okay, now again he challenged him, try shooting an arrow for me. Try shooting an arrow for me. Shooting an arrow can be seen as doing something without any concepts, without any stink of Zen in it. Doing something that is so appropriate at that moment, that is free, completely free. Really doing it as in show your true self of what you are, without what you think you are. What is that? And that is, of course, what we are always trying to find out. And that's what he's challenging him with. Okay, Rio hesitated. Oh, well, you don't hesitate. You don't hesitate in the Dokusan room. Kinzan hit him 7 times. Here comes the stick. With his stick and said, I will let this fellow doubt 30 years, Rinzai gave him 7 arrows. I wonder whether he realized or he didn't realize. That is really important. So the arrows, in a way, we must see through that. We must use an arrow, if you like, to pass all these concepts. Okay. And I was reading the other day in one of the Buddhist magazines that I get a lovely analogy, which is very often used in Zen, and I think it comes from a sutra by Thich Nhat Hanh on the wave and the water. And I wrote it down for you on a piece of paper. I just like to read it out and somehow link that to our true self, finding our true self. And so here the wave and the water. So we can say the wave is ourselves and the water is our true self, if you like. So anyway, this is what he wrote. In our life, as a wave, we struggle and we have fear because we have to go up and down. We have to be born and die, to exist and not to exist. We can see clearly that to live the life of the wave is very difficult. We live the life of a wave. In other words, we are living separately. We are having all these ups and downs. We have all these daily struggles. We have our anxiety. We have our tasks that we have to do. We're getting older, and eventually we die. And what's it all worth it? And there's all the challenges that go with that. But it says, when the wave discovers it is water. When the wave discovers it is water. The wave discovers the true self. When we discover our true self, then it begins to practice living as water. A wave is and is not, is up and is down, is high and low. But water is utterly free. Water is utterly free. There's no up and down. It's just water. Is utterly free. There's no life and death. The wave doesn't all of us, not just all of a sudden born. It's just a concept. It's just water. It's not born. There's no die when it goes crashes on the beach. It doesn't die. It's just no. There's no life and death in that context. The question is, does the wave have the ability to live its true nature as water? Or must it just live as a wave? A wave can practice living its life as water. Okay. It's just lovely, this analogy. There's, by the way, there's another book that was written, read it years ago by a German Zen master, Willigis Jäger, The Wave is the Water. It's written, unfortunately, I don't think it is published in English. But this whole book is based on that analogy of the wave and the water, and it's just a beautiful analogy for our practice. For what is it actually we're trying to achieve here? It is to come back to water. Those of you that are Star Trek fans, always like that image of the Great Link. With the see some people are nodding. I know Maggie is a Trekkie fan, just like myself. There's that great link, you know, where you can go into and come out of. That sort of got it's got that same sort of order profits or whatever. There's anyway, there's lots of links that relate to these things in Star Trek, but it's just a beautiful way of looking at it, a very simple way of looking at it, to for us to get a sense that our separateness as a wave is just a way, it's just a mindset. That beneath that, once we can get rid of that mindset, you know, we can live our life as water. This is what this points to. Okay, we're going now to the verse. By the way, just one more thing on that. Our Koan practice is the practice of seeing, you know, our life as water in a more clearer and clearer and clearer way. So once, of course, there needs to be that shift that needs to have happened. But once that happens, that is really what Koan work is all about. Because it's always, the Koans always point to water, not the wave. You know, they always point to what is it in there that, that relates to water and not the wave. So that's why Koan work is so important. Okay, so here we come to the verse. According to Haku and Senji, this is one of the five, he says, top verses in the Blue Cliff record. And remember, this is a classical, certainly in Japan and in China, the Blue Cliff record is really highly regarded as a literary classic as well. So it's not an easy verse, but anyway, we'll have a go at this. And it goes on to say, I have brought him out for you, the master of the barrier. So this is written now by Secho. He's the original one that collected it. So he obviously, so that indicates, I have brought him out for you. Like, poor old Rio couldn't bring him out. But now, have a look, I'll bring him out for you. So have a look at it. I have brought him out for you, the master of the barrier, your truth, the true self. Okay, so have a look in this verse if you can see it, okay? Those who let loose arrows, don't be careless. Don't who let loose arrows, don't be careless. I like to see that as a, in a way, a challenge for students in the Dokusan room and also for teachers in the Dokusan room, you know. So those who let loose arrows, you know. And the challenge here comes back to self-referencing. As soon as I self-reference, which again is a default position that I take in my functional mind, you know, very difficult to get out of that habit of self-referencing. I am always trapped in the duality. So if I let loose an arrow, there's an I, there's an arrow, and something to let loose, you know. You look at target practice of archery, or even in any sport, the idea in sport is to let go of self. There is just the arrow. Bang! As soon as I start thinking, am I doing it right? Is the path right? Am I doing it? It's a self with a golf swing or tennis in tennis. It's a seamless practice. The arrow, the path, the shooter, it's one activity. So to me, this is what this refers to. Those who let loose arrows, don't be careless. Don't self-reference too much. Don't think that you're doing it. Otherwise, you lose. You cannot do it. You're not in that state of mind that is free. You know. So every time when we are in Dokusan, or every time we challenge ourselves, we challenge ourselves in the sense that we let go to such a degree that we see the bare fact of it. You know, and that is not an easy thing to do. And to me, this is the way I read this line. Those who let loose arrows, don't be careless. You know, this is not an easy practice. If you take this eye, the ears will surely become deaf. If you take this ear, both eyes will go blind. Again, very obscure. Okay, if you take this eye, the ears will surely become deaf. Okay. So again, when I look at that with my discriminating mind, what do you mean? Eye, ear, deaf. You know, if you take this ear, both eyes will go blind. Again, it challenges us to see the totality, the unity to see the water. In water, there is no wave. There is no up, there is no down, there is no crashing, there is no sound. It's just water, you know. And that is what he's saying. If you take this ear, the ears, if you take this eye, the ears will surely become deaf. And if they don't, you're not seeing it. You just don't see it. You know? You're still stuck in eye, ear. Remember the Heart Sutra? No eye, ear, sound, and it keeps on going. That's right there in the Heart Sutra. Okay. The master of the barrier is never divided. No eye, ear, nose. Okay, Now the next line. It is greatly to be admired, breaking through three barriers with a single arrow, distinct and clear, the path of the arrow. So first of all, it is greatly to be admired. One commentary says this, admired, not admired. It is the way anyway, whether you admire it or not, it's got nothing to do with it. But actually, I think it is greatly to be admired for any one of us that can punch through, especially with one arrow, through all of those concepts and really realize and see clearly. I take my head off. That is not easy, even though we don't actually need to do much. It's always there. You know, what is not easy is that process of letting go. That is not easy. But once we let go, it manifests itself as what it is all the time. It's always there. So that is what this refers to. Breaking through the three barriers with a single arrow, distinct and clear, the path of the arrow. So distinct and clear, the path of the arrow. You know, distinct and clear, the path of the arrow. What's the path of the arrow, distinct and clear? You know, when I read this, I thought of the Dharma and the Dharma. The Dharma lowercase d and the Dharma capitalcase d. The Dharma lowercase d is a very difficult path. There's so many numbers to remember. There's so many things to remember. There's so many things that we need to do in order to grasp what all this Buddhism is about. It becomes very clear, Dharma with capital D, once we see it. Just whoosh, clear as mud, as we say in Australia. So this is the way I look at it. Distinct and clear, the path of the arrow. Don't you see? Genja had something to say. So Genja was another Zen master. The outstanding student precedes heaven in becoming the mind's ancestor. Again, a bit obscure. Mind's ancestor is our true self. The mind's ancestor. You know, we see ourselves as separate, okay? But the mind is another beautiful word. Mind's ancestor is our true self, okay? Now, it says the outstanding student precedes heaven. So, it precedes heaven. So you've got to remember when this was written, precedes heaven. This is a cosmological. We could say precedes the Big Bang. No matter what we point to, it precedes it. Our true self, it precedes it. You could even say God, you know, it precedes it. It is always that which comes before. You know, that is really our true self. This is what Secho is saying here. Don't you see? Genja had something to say. The outstanding student precedes heaven. He's never stuck anywhere, you know, in becoming the mind's ancestor.